A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. It's the Tier 3 installment in the Deep Inventory series we've been building. Tier 1 was everyday essentials. Tier 2 was the next layer of broadly practical hardware. Tier 3 is where things get interesting. Daniel wants us to define the boundary clearly, then build a bill of materials for specialist items that someone who regularly builds, repairs, modifies, mounts, or fabricates things would actually use. Not just more hardware. Stuff that solves awkward problems, doesn't cost much to stock, but might need a particular tool or project type to justify. He's asking for practical sizes, quantities, whether an assortment kit makes sense, what tools you need, compatibility issues, safety limits, and where the line is between stocking versus buying only when a project demands it.
He included a long list of categories to work through. Rivet nuts, threaded inserts, helicoils, T-nuts, cam lock fittings, confirmant screws, dowel pins, retaining rings, well nuts, Chicago screws, U-bolts, hose clamps, neodymium magnets, rigging hardware, specialty drywall anchors, concrete anchors, chemical anchors, O-rings and grommets, shims and packers. Then he wants a prioritized purchase list and a storage system. This is a full episode.
It's a full episode because the boundary question is the hard part. Tier 2 was already pushing into stuff most people don't keep. So what makes something Tier 3 instead of more Tier 2?
The way I think about it, Tier 2 is hardware you'll probably use within a year if you do regular DIY. Things like machine screws in common metric and imperial sizes, wall plugs beyond the basic ones, a few sizes of washers and nuts in stainless. Tier 3 is hardware that solves a specific problem you might encounter once every couple of years. But when you do, having it on hand saves you a Saturday afternoon trip and possibly a project stall. The cost per item is still low. We're talking cents to a couple of dollars per piece. But you need to know what you're doing to use it correctly.
The boundary isn't about rarity or cost. It's about whether the hardware requires a specific tool you might not own, or a specific material or technique you might not have encountered. If you need a dedicated setting tool, or if using it wrong creates a safety issue, that's Tier 3 territory.
A drywall anchor is Tier 1 or 2. A toggle bolt rated for a 100-pound ceiling mount, that's Tier 3. A wood screw is Tier 1, a confirmant screw designed specifically for particle board furniture joints. The hardware is still domestic in scale. We're not talking about industrial press-fit bushings for hydraulic systems, but it sits at the edge of what a serious home workshop keeps.
Let's work through the categories Daniel listed. Start with rivet nuts, or nutserts, same thing. What are they, and why would anyone keep them?
A rivet nut is a threaded insert you install into thin material, sheet metal, tubing, thin wall square stock, where you can't tap threads because there's not enough material thickness. You drill a hole, insert the rivet nut, and use a setting tool that pulls the mandrel to collapse the backside of the insert, creating a bulge that locks it in place. What you're left with is a permanent threaded hole in material that's maybe a 1/16 of an inch thick.
The problem this solves is what? Mounting something to a metal frame that you can't get behind.
Think of a steel tube workbench leg where you want to bolt on a bracket. You can't reach inside the tube to hold a nut. You can't tap threads into a 1/16 inch wall, you'd get maybe one usable thread. A rivet nut gives you a proper threaded anchor you could bolt into from one side. They're used everywhere in automotive work, in metal furniture, in rack mounting for networking gear, in trailer builds, in anything with hollow metal sections.
Why Tier 3 and not Tier 2?
Because you need the setting tool. A basic manual rivet nut tool, the kind that looks like a rivet gun with interchangeable mandrels, runs about $30 to $50. You also need to match the mandrel size to the rivet nut size. If you don't own the tool, the hardware is useless. That tool dependency is what pushes it into Tier 3. Once you have the tool, the nutserts themselves are cheap, maybe 10 to 20 cents each in bulk.
What sizes make sense for a home shop?
M4, M5, M6, and M8 in steel, plus maybe M4 and M5 in aluminum for lighter work where you don't want galvanic corrosion. You don't need Imperial unless you're working on American-made equipment. Quantities, maybe 20 of each in M4 and M5, 15 in M6, 10 in M8. An assortment kit is absolutely the way to go for starting out. Most kits come with the mandrels included. The key compatibility issue is material thickness. Each rivet nut has a grip range, and you need the material to fall within that range. Too thin, and it won't collapse properly. Too thick, and you can't set it.
What about installation failure modes?
The main one is spinning. If you don't set the rivet nut with enough force, or if the hole is slightly oversized, the insert can spin when you try to tighten a bolt into it later. Now you've got a bolt stuck in a spinning insert with no way to hold the back side. It's a special kind of misery. The fix is usually drilling the bolt head off and starting over. The other failure is cracking the parent material if you're too close to an edge. Yes, if you own the tool and work with metal. Otherwise, buy when the project demands it.
Related category. Threaded inserts for plastic and heatset inserts for 3D printing. These feel like two different things sharing a name.
Threaded inserts for plastic are typically brass, with a knurled or barbed exterior. You press them into a slightly undersized hole in plastic using a soldering iron or a heat source to soften the material around them, or sometimes you can press them in cold if the fit is right. Heatset inserts are specifically for 3D printed parts. You set a soldering iron to a temperature below the plastic's melting point, but above its softening point, press the insert into a designed cavity, and the plastic flows into the knurling as it cools. You get a metal thread in a plastic part that can handle repeated assembly and disassembly without stripping.
The problem this solves is that screwing directly into plastic is terrible.
It's the strip thread in a plastic enclosure problem. You've seen it, the screw holes in a laptop bottom case that are just smooth cones now because someone over-tightened them. Threaded inserts give you metal, on-metal fastening in a plastic host. For 3D printing specifically, they're transformative. You can design parts that bolt together properly instead of relying on friction fits or glue. 5, M3, M4, and M5 cover almost everything in 3D printing and small electronics enclosures. M3 is the workhorse. An assortment kit of brass heat set inserts is maybe $15 for a few hundred pieces in common sizes. The tool is a soldering iron with a temperature controlled tip. You want to be around 200 to 250 Celsius for PLA, a bit higher for PETG or ABS. Don't use the same tip you solder with. Get a dedicated insert setting tip or a cheap second iron.
These are worth stocking if you own a 3D printer.
If you print functional parts, absolutely. If you don't, they're just tiny brass cylinders in a drawer. This is a perfect example of the Tier 3 logic. Buy them after the relevant tool is acquired.
Helicoil-style thread repair inserts. These feel like a different category entirely.
A helicoil is a coiled wire insert that repairs strip threads in metal. You drill out the damaged thread, tap a new oversized thread with a special tap, then wind in the coiled insert which provides a new thread at the original size. The most common home use is repairing a strip spark plug hole in an aluminum engine head. But at the domestic scale, it's things like stripped threads in aluminum furniture frames, bicycle components, camera tripod mounts, or lawn equipment.
I've seen the aftermath of someone trying to fix a stripped thread with epoxy and hope. It didn't end well.
Hope is not a thread locker. The helicoil approach is genuinely elegant because the stainless steel insert is actually stronger than the original aluminum threads. The repaired hole ends up more durable than what it's replacing. But here's the Tier 3 question. Are they worth stocking? I'd say no, not as a general kit. The tap is specific to each insert size, and a full kit with multiple sizes runs well over $100. This is firmly in the buy when a project creates a recurring need category, unless you're regularly rebuilding engines or restoring old machinery.
What about T-nuts and pronged furniture nuts? These feel more accessible.
T-nuts are those threaded inserts with a flange and prongs that you hammer into wood from the backside. When you tighten a bolt from the front, the prongs dig in and prevent rotation. They're used in speaker cabinets, workbench builds, jigs and fixtures, anywhere you want a machine thread in wood that can handle repeated assembly. Pronged furniture nuts are similar but lower profile. You see them in flat pack furniture pressed into particle board.
Sizes and stocking.
M6 and M8 T-nuts are the ones you'll actually use, maybe M5 for lighter work. An assortment of 50 in mixed M6 and M8 costs about $10. No special tool needed, just a hammer and a drill bit size for the barrel. These are worth stocking. They're cheap, they don't degrade, and the moment you need to build a jig or repair a chair, you'll be glad you have them.
Camlock Furniture Hardware. This is the stuff that comes with IKEA furniture and inevitably has one piece missing.
That's exactly why you stock it. A cam lock is a two-part connector, a metal cam that sits in a large drilled hole in one panel, and a connecting bolt or dowel that screws into the other panel. When you turn the cam with a screwdriver, it grabs the head of the bolt and draws the panels together. The problem it solves is knockdown furniture assembly and repair. If you've ever moved house and lost a cam during disassembly, or if a cam has cracked, you know the frustration of having a whole bookcase held together by everything except one critical joint.
The IKEA parts bin at the store is a testament to how often this happens.
An assortment kit of common cam sizes and connecting bolts costs maybe $12 and covers most flat pack furniture from the last 20 years. The sizes are somewhat standardized. 15mm cams with M6 bolts are extremely common. Worth stocking if you own flat pack furniture. The storage challenge is that cams and bolts look similar across sizes but aren't interchangeable, so label the compartments.
I'll admit I'd never heard of these before Daniel's list.
They're specifically designed for particle board and MDF furniture. They have a large, coarse thread, a long, unthreaded shank near the head, and a wide flat head that sits flush in a countersunk hole. The shank aligns the panels, the coarse thread bites into the crumbly particle board without stripping, and the wide head prevents pull-through. They're used in kitchen cabinets, wardrobe frames, and office furniture made from engineered wood panels.
These are a repair item for when particle board furniture joints fail.
The original screws, often just generic wood screws, strip out of particle board over time, especially in hinges and drawer slides. Replacing them with Confirmat screws of the same diameter but with that aggressive thread pattern can save a cabinet that's otherwise headed for the curb. Sizes 5x40 and 5x50mm cover most applications. A small box of each is maybe $6. The only tool requirement is a Confirmat drill bit, which has a stepped profile to create the right pilot hole and countersink in one pass. That bit is another $8. Worth stocking if you have particle board furniture. The bit is the gatekeeper.
Dowel pins and fluted wooden dowels. These feel almost too basic for Tier 3.
They sit right on the Tier 2 to 3 boundary. Plain wooden dowel pins are used for aligning and reinforcing wood joints. You drill matching holes in two pieces, glue the dowel in, and clamp. Fluted dowels have grooves that let excess glue escape and provide better grip. The reason they might be Tier 3 is that most casual DIYers don't do the kind of joinery that requires them. But if you're repairing chairs, building cabinets, or doing any kind of furniture-grade woodworking, you'll use them regularly. 6, 8, and 10mm diameters, in lengths from 30 to 50mm. A mixed kit of a few hundred costs under $10. The only tool is a dowel jig or center point markers for accurate hole alignment, another $15 to $20. Worth stocking if you do wood joinery. If you don't, they're just tiny wooden cylinders.
Roll pins, spring pins, clevis pins, and cotter pins. This is a whole family of mechanical fasteners that most people only encounter when something breaks.
They're all different. Roll pins, also called spring pins, are hollow cylindrical pins with a slit along the length. You drive them into a slightly undersized hole, and they compress to create a tight friction fit. They're used to secure shafts, gears, and collars in everything from power tools to bicycles to lawnmowers. Clevis pins are solid pins with a hole at one end for a cotter pin, used in linkages and pivot joints. Think brake linkages on a bicycle, or the hinge on a folding table. Cotter pins are those split pins you bend back after inserting to secure a clevis pin or a castellated nut.
E-clips, circlips, retaining rings. These are the tiny things that fly across the workshop and vanish into another dimension.
The workshop has a higher dimensional space that absorbs small spring steel parts. An E-clip is a flat retaining ring shaped like an E that snaps into a groove on a shaft to hold a bearing or gear in place. A circlip is similar but circular with ears for pliers. They're used on axles, in power tool gearboxes, in bicycle hubs, in anything with a rotating shaft. A star lock washer is a push-on retaining fastener with internal teeth that grip a shaft, common on children's toys and small appliances.
Stocking strategy for all of these?
Assortment kits are the only sensible approach. A roll pin kit with 150 pieces in sizes from 1/16 to 3/8 inch costs about $12. An e-clip assortment of 300 pieces in metric and imperial is maybe $15. Cotter pin kits are even cheaper. The installation tools are pin punches for roll pins, snap ring pliers for circlips, and needle nose pliers for cotter pins. You'll want snap ring pliers with interchangeable tips for internal and external rings, about $20. These are absolutely worth stocking if you repair anything mechanical. The cost to frustration ratio is off the charts. The one time you need a 2mm e-clip and have it versus spending an hour searching online for a replacement that costs 2 cents but ships in a week. That's the entire argument for Tier 3.
Rubber wheel nuts and expansion nuts. These sound like something that belongs in plumbing, but Daniel has them in a general hardware context.
Nuts are rubber inserts with a brass threaded nut molded into one end. You push them into a hole in thin material, sheet metal, fiberglass, plastic panels, and when you tighten a bolt into them, the rubber body compresses and bulges behind the panel, creating a watertight, vibration-dampening anchor. They're used in boat fittings, motorcycle fairings, solar panel mounts on RV roofs, and any situation where you need to mount something to a thin panel and want to seal against water.
They solve the same access problem as rivet nuts, but add waterproofing.
The rubber body absorbs shock that would loosen a metal on metal fastener. The trade-off is lower strength. A well nut won't handle the loads, a rivet nut will. Sizes M4, M5, M6, and M8 cover most uses. A small assortment kit is under $10. No special tool needed, just a wrench. Worth stocking if you work on vehicles, boats, or outdoor equipment. The rubber does degrade over time, so don't buy a lifetime supply.
Brass threaded inserts and press fit bushings. We touched on brass inserts for plastic, but these are from metal and wood, right?
These are different. Brass threaded inserts for wood have coarse external threads. They look like a fat screw on the outside with internal machine threads. You screw them into a drilled hole in hardwood using a hex key or a special driver bit, and they give you a machine thread in wood that can handle repeated assembly. They're used in furniture making, guitar building, and jig construction. Press fit bushings are plain cylindrical bushings, often oil impregnated bronze, that you press into a housing to create a bearing surface for a rotating shaft. They're common in older machinery restoration and in homemade tools. Brass wood inserts in M6 and M8, maybe 20 of each. A driver tool is another $10, worth it if you build jigs or furniture with knockdown hardware. Press fit bushings are firmly in the buy when needed category. The sizes are too application specific to stock blind.
Chicago screws, also called binding posts. These are those two-part screws where one side is a barrel with internal threads and the other is a screw that threads into it. They look clean from both sides.
They're used in leatherwork, bookbinding, belt making, and any application where you want a screw that looks finished on both sides. They're also common in office furniture for attaching nameplates and in some electronics enclosures. The problem they solve is purely aesthetic. A regular screw and nut looks industrial. A Chicago screw looks intentional. Sizes M4, M5, and M6 in lengths from 6 to 20 millimeters. An assortment in brass or nickel finish is about $15. No special tools. Worth stocking if you do leather work or repair office furniture. Otherwise, a niche item.
U-bolts, pipe clamps, P-clips, and saddle clamps. These are all about securing things to other things.
U-bolts are exactly what they sound like. A U-shaped bolt with threads on both ends used to clamp pipe or tubing to a flat surface. Pipe clamps and P-clips are metal or plastic brackets that wrap around a pipe or cable and have a mounting hole for a screw. Saddle clamps are similar, but usually two-piece with a curved metal strap and a base. The problem they solve is routing and securing. Cables along a wall, conduit across a ceiling, exhaust pipe under a chassis, a bicycle pump bracket on a frame.
This feels like it could spiral into infinite sizes.
It absolutely can. The disciplined approach is to stock a small assortment of stainless steel P-clips in common cable diameters, 6, 8, 10, and 12 millimeters, and a few U-bolt sized for standard pipe diameters like 1/2 inch, 3/4 inch, and 1 inch. An assortment kit of P-clips with 50 pieces in mixed sizes is about $12. U-bolts are cheap individually. These are worth stocking if you do any kind of workshop organization or cable management. The moment you need to secure a dust collection hose or route, an Ethernet cable neatly, you'll use them.
These feel almost too basic, but Daniel specifically called out useful small and medium sizes.
The reason they're Tier 3 and not Tier 1 is that most households don't need a range of hose clamps on hand. But if you have a workshop with dust collection, a pressure washer, a garden irrigation system, or you work on small engines, you'll use them. The Worm Drive stainless steel type is the standard. They're adjustable across a range and reusable. Sizes that cover hose diameters from about 10 to 50 millimeters will handle most domestic and workshop needs. An assortment of 30 clamps in mixed sizes is $10. No tools beyond a screwdriver or a 6mm nut driver. Worth stocking if you have hoses. The one thing to know, don't over-tighten them on plastic barbs. You'll crack the fitting.
Neodymium magnets, including countersunk ones. These have become oddly ubiquitous.
They're in everything now. Cabinet door catches, tool holders, jigs, sensor triggers, model making, craft projects, and about 1,000 3D printed gadgets. Countersunk magnets have a hole through the center so you can screw them to a surface while the magnetic face stays flush. The problem they solve is any situation where you need a removable, tool-free attachment. Cabinet door that won't stay closed? Want to mount a tool rack that you can rearrange? Need to embed a sensor in a 3D printed enclosure with a magnetic trigger? Tiny neodymium disc.
What sizes and grades?
N52 is the strongest commonly available grade. For general use, disc magnets in 8, 10, 12, and 15 millimeter diameters, 2 to 3 millimeters thick. Countersunk magnets in 10 and 12 millimeter diameters with M3 or M4 holes. An assortment kit of 150 mixed discs is about $15. Countersunk magnets are sold in smaller packs. The safety consideration is real. These are not toys. Two N52 magnets snapping together can pinch hard enough to draw blood. They can shatter if they collide. Keep them away from pacemakers and credit card strips. And if a child swallows more than one, the magnets can attract each other through intestinal walls. That's a surgical emergency.
That escalated quickly from cabinet catches.
The physics doesn't care about the application, but yes, worth stocking. They're useful in ways you don't anticipate until you have them.
Small chains, quick links, shackles, and turnbuckles. This is rigging hardware.
Light-duty rigging. Quick links are oval chain links with a threaded sleeve that opens and closes them. You use them to connect lengths of chain or to attach something to a fixed point. Shackles are U-shaped with a removable pin, used for similar connections but typically higher load rating. Turnbuckles are adjustable length connectors with threads at both ends. You rotate the body to tension or loosen whatever they're connecting. The home and workshop uses are things like hanging a heavy bag from a ceiling beam, tensioning a gate, securing a load on a trailer, building a shade sail anchor.
This is where safety limits become the dominant consideration.
Every piece of rigging hardware has a working load limit, and you need to respect it. A quick link from the hardware store might be rated for 150 pounds, which is fine for hanging a port swing, but not for lifting an engine. The material matters. Stainless steel for outdoor use, zinc plated for indoor. Sizes worth stocking are small. Quick links with a 3 to 5 millimeter wire diameter, small D shackles with a 1/4 inch or 6 millimeter pin, and a couple of small turnbuckles with M6 or M8 threads. These are worth stocking if you do any kind of overhead mounting or outdoor tensioning. Buy from a known brand, not the cheapest marketplace listing. A quick link that fails under load turns into a projectile.
Specialty drywall fixings for unusually heavy or awkward loads. We've all done the thing where you hang something heavy on drywall and spend the next 6 months waiting for the crash.
Standard plastic wall plugs are Tier 1. Toggle bolts and heavy-duty anchors are Tier 3 because the loads and the consequences are different. A toggle bolt has spring-loaded wings that fold flat to go through a hole, then spring open behind the drywall. When you tighten the bolt, the wings spread the load across a much larger area than a plastic plug. Good toggle bolts can hold 50 to 100 pounds and half-inch drywall, depending on the specific design and the bolt diameter. Snap Toggle and Toggler are the brand names that dominate this space. They use a metal channel that sits behind the drywall, and they're rated for significantly higher loads than traditional spring toggles.
The problem is anything heavy that needs to go on a wall where there's no stud.
Floating shelves, large mirrors, wall-mounted cabinets, heavy artwork, TV mounts where the stud spacing doesn't match the bracket. The key installation detail is that the hole needs to be exactly the right size, too large, and the toggle won't seat properly. The other category worth mentioning is metal self-drilling anchors for heavier loads. They screw directly into drywall without pre-drilling and can hold 30 to 50 pounds each. An assortment of toggle bolts in 3/16 and quarter inch sizes, plus a few snap toggles rated for heavy loads, is worth keeping if you mount things on drywall. Total cost may be $20 for a selection that covers most scenarios.
Concrete wedge anchors, sleeve anchors, and drop-in anchors. These are for mounting things to concrete, brick, or block.
They're all different in how they work. A wedge anchor is a threaded stud with an expanding wedge at the bottom. You drill a hole in concrete, insert the anchor, and tighten the nut. The wedge is pulled up into a tapered sleeve, expanding it against the walls of the hole. Once set, it's not coming out without destroying the concrete. Sleeve anchors work similarly, but the expansion happens along a longer sleeve, which distributes the load better in softer materials like brick or block. Drop-in anchors are internally threaded sleeves. You hammer into a drilled hole, then set with a special setting tool that expands the bottom of the sleeve. You then thread a bolt into the sleeve.
These are for mounting things like a workbench to a garage floor, or a pull-up bar to a concrete wall.
The problem they solve is fastening to masonry where plastic plugs aren't strong enough. The sizes worth keeping are M8 and M10 wedge anchors in lengths of about 60 to 80 millimeters. That'll handle most home applications, like securing a safe to a floor or mounting a heavy shelf bracket to a block wall. The tool requirement is a hammer drill with masonry bits and, for drop-in anchors, the specific setting tool. These are worth stocking in small quantities if you have concrete or masonry walls and you mount things to them. If you're in a timber frame house with drywall, skip the whole category.
Chemical anchors and threaded rod. Daniel specifically said to discuss these carefully, as project-specific.
Chemical anchors are two-part epoxy, or polyester resins that you inject into a drilled hole in concrete or masonry, then insert threaded rod. The resin cures and bonds the rod to the substrate. They're incredibly strong, often stronger than the concrete itself, and they're used for structural applications like securing steel columns, mounting heavy equipment, or anchoring safety railings. The reason Daniel flagged them as project-specific is that they're not something you stock casually. The resin has a shelf life, usually 6 to 12 months. The applicator gun is specialized and costs $40 to $100. The loads involved are often structural, meaning getting it wrong has serious consequences. This is firmly in the buy only when a project demands it category, and when you do, buy from a reputable brand, follow the installation instructions exactly, and check the expiration date on the cartridge.
O-rings, grommets, rubber feet, and vibration isolation hardware. This is a broad category of squishy things.
They solve a surprising range of problems. O-rings are circular rubber seals used in plumbing fittings, hydraulic connections, and anything that needs to contain fluid under pressure. A leaking garden hose connector is usually just a failed O-ring. Grommets are rubber or plastic rings that line a hole in sheet metal or plastic to protect cables or hoses from chafing against sharp edges. Rubber feet are self-explanatory. They go on the bottom of things to prevent scratching floors and reduce vibration. Vibration isolation mounts are rubber or elastomer components with threaded studs on both ends. You mount a motor or pump on them and they absorb vibration that would otherwise transmit into the structure. O-rings, an assortment kit of nitrile. O-rings in common plumbing sizes is about $10 and covers 90% of household leaks. Get the kind with a sizing gauge included. Grommets, a small kit of assorted rubber grommets for cable diameters from 5 to 20 millimeters is another $10. Rubber feet, a sheet of adhesive-backed hemispherical feet in various sizes, costs about $8. Vibration isolation mounts are project-specific. The O-ring kit alone has saved me more trips to the hardware store than I can count. A dripping hose or a leaky faucet is almost always a 50-cent O-ring.
Assorted shims, packers, wedges, and leveling pieces. This feels like the least glamorous category in the entire series.
It's the least glamorous and possibly the most used. A shim is a thin piece of material, plastic, wood, or metal, used to fill a small gap or adjust alignment. Packers are thicker spacers. Wedges are tapered for adjustable leveling. The problem they solve is that nothing in the real world is perfectly flat, square, or plumb. You're installing a door and the frame is slightly out of square. You need shims. You're leveling a washing machine on an uneven floor. You need plastic leveling wedges. You're mounting a cabinet and the wall bows inward. You need packers behind the bracket.
I've used folded cardboard as a shim more times than I'd like to admit.
Cardboard compresses over time and absorbs moisture. Plastic shims don't. A mixed pack of plastic shims in various thicknesses, 0.5 millimeter, 1 millimeter, 2 millimeters, 3 millimeters, plus a set of leveling wedges, costs about $15 total and lasts forever. No tools needed. This is worth stocking for anyone who installs or mounts anything. It's so basic I almost want to put it in tier 2, but the reality is most people don't think about shims until they need one.
Let's talk storage and labeling, because a lot of these items are small, visually similar, and easily confused.
The Tier 3 inventory needs a different storage approach than Tier 1 and 2. Tier 1 and 2 fit in a standard parts organizer with clear plastic drawers. Tier 3 items are more varied in shape. You've got threaded inserts in tiny bags, roll pins that all look identical, O-rings that differ by a millimeter. My recommendation is a combination of small compartment boxes with adjustable dividers and labeled poly bags inside a larger bin.
Labeling is not optional.
It never is. But for Tier 3, it's critical because you might not touch a particular item for 2 years. When you do need it, you need to know immediately whether that E-clip is 5 millimeters or 6. The label should include the item name, the size, the material if relevant, and the date you bought it. For items like chemical anchors with an expiration date, write the expiration date on the label. For O-rings, include the durometer and material if you have multiple types.
I'd add that the storage system should group by function rather than by item type. Put all the drywall anchors together. Toggles, snap toggles, heavy-duty plugs. So when you're mounting something to drywall, you open one drawer and see all your options.
That's smart. Functional grouping means you don't have to remember whether a toggle bolt lives with bolts or with anchors. Group by the problem you're solving. Wall mounting in one section, thread repair in another, vibration and sealing in a third, rigging and hanging in a fourth.
Let's build the prioritized purchase list Daniel asked for. Buy now. Buy after tool acquisition. Buy only when a project demands it.
Buy now. These are the items that don't require special tools and solve problems that come up unpredictably. O-ring assortment kit, plastic shim and wedge set, hose clamp assortment, P-clip assortment for cable management, T-nut assortment in M6 and M8, cam lock furniture hardware kit, cotter pin assortment, neodymium magnet assortment with a few countersunk magnets, rubber grommet kit. Total cost is maybe $80 to $100, and it covers a huge range of household and workshop surprises.
Buy after the relevant tool is acquired.
Rivet nut kit with mandrels. Buy once you have the setting tool. Heat set inserts for 3D printing. Buy once you have a temperature controlled soldering iron. Confirm it screws. Buy once you have the step drill bit. Brass threaded inserts for wood. Buy once you have the driver tool. Roll pin assortment. Buy once you have a set of pin punches. E-clip and circlip assortment. Buy once you have snap ring pliers. These are all gated by a tool that costs between $10 and $50.
Buy only when a project creates a recurring need.
Helicoil thread repair kits. Two size specific and expensive to stock blind. Chemical anchors and threaded rod. Shelf life and safety concerns make these project only. Concrete wedge and sleeve anchors. Unless you're mounting things to masonry regularly. Press fit bushings. Two application specific. Chicago screws. Unless you do leather work or bookbinding regularly. Turnbuckles and shackles. Buy for the specific project with known load requirements. Well nuts, unless you have a boat or an RV.
The Tier 4 episode Daniel mentioned, that would be the truly rare stuff. Left-hand threaded fasteners, high-temperature alloys, tamper-proof security screws, specialized electronics hardware. The things you don't stock even in Tier 3.
Tier 4 is the I'm restoring a vintage motorcycle and need a Whitworth thread tier. But that's for another episode. The Tier 3 list we've built here is practical. It's the difference between finishing a project on a Saturday afternoon and waiting until Tuesday for a $2 part to arrive.
The thread that runs through all of this is that stocking Tier 3 hardware is an investment in momentum. Every item on this list costs less than the time and frustration of stopping mid-project to source it. That's the real value proposition.
It's cumulative. The first time you reach into a drawer and pull out exactly the right E-clip or O-ring or toggle bolt, the entire system pays for itself. Not in money, in the thing you didn't lose, which was the afternoon.
That's the note to land on. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late 1600s, Turkish oil wrestling nearly vanished from the historical record when a single manuscript describing the technique surfaced in Timbuktu, suggesting that an Ottoman wrestler or merchant had carried the tradition across the Sahara, where it was briefly practiced before fading from the region entirely.
A Saharan oil wrestling manuscript in Timbuktu. Of course there was.
The mental image of an Ottoman wrestler crossing the Sahara to teach grappling techniques in Mali is going to stay with me.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who's ever lost a Saturday to a missing fastener. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.